Deborah McDermott is the author of Voyage of the Redeemed. Now, just before we go and chat, I'll just tell you a bit about who Deborah is with the blurb from her book. So Deborah McDermott was born in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, where she developed a great love for books and writing. She met and married her husband, Sean, in 1990 and worked with him on a number of ventures. The McDermotts emigrated from Zimbabwe to New Zealand in 2006 and settled in Waiuku, South Auckland, with their two sons, Daniel and Peter. Now, her book, Voyage of the Redeemed, is her first novel and a tribute to Sean, who encouraged her to write the story in the first place. So welcome, Debbie.
Hi, Selena. How are you doing?
Good. It's great to have you with us.
It's good to be here.
Now, Voyage of the Redeemed, tell us a bit about...
why I wrote it?
Yes, why you wrote
this. Back in Zimbabwe, I always wanted to write a book, but publishing would have been just too difficult and far too expensive. When I arrived here, my husband said, you know that book you've got in you? I want you to write it.
Mm-hmm.
So I began, and it developed from there. And of course, every book that you write or story you write has a seed. And I'd always been intrigued about Noah and the 100 years it took him to build the ark,
mm-hmm.
But how they lived in that 100 years.
Before the flood.
Yeah. Because from the little bit we do know from the historical story in the Bible was that he suffered a lot of rejection, probably ostracized. Mm. So all sorts of questions I had. I mean, he and his wife, they had their three children. Well, the prophecy said that the people that would be on the ark would be him, his wife, his sons, and their wives. So where did the wives come from? You know, it was little questions like that I found myself asking. So I thought, well, I'm going to write a story about this family and what they endured and how they survived that 100 years, how they built the boat, which was the size of the Titanic.
Wow. So you did a lot of research.
I did a lot of research, and unlike some of the films about the flood, like, for instance, the most recent one with Russell Crowe, is when I did my research, I thought, well, these couldn't have been a primitive people to build the size of a boat, the size of the Titanic.
Mm.
And so I researched things like, well, what was the wood that they made it out of? And the closest interpretation is that it was planed wood. So that told me that they had sophisticated tools and things like that. So yeah. I found myself asking all these questions. So based on the research I did, I built a story that showed that these weren't a primitive people, and just built my story around that.
Wow.
So that was the seed, that got the story going.
So this is like a historical fiction or a novel of that time.
That's right.
I'll just read the blurb. It says here, The Voyage of the Redeemed tells the story of Noah's call to build the ark and the opposition he and his family endured in a world riddled with depravity. Interwoven in the historical facts of the tale is plenty of intrigue, treachery, and romance. The story culminates with the Great Flood and how the family of eight miraculously survived it. Now, I have read this book. It's been a while since I've read it, and I really enjoyed it, so I just like
Thank
to say
you.
That. And it was interesting, the take that you had on, you had the whole story of how it was built and also the family relationships.
That's right. That was my key thing, were the relationships.
And it wasn't all plain sailing or easy going.
No. Well, is any relationship.
No. And also that it took so many years, like 100 or 120, was it?
I think it was 100. There's a lot of conjecture. But when you actually have a look at the genealogies, 100, maybe 102 is probably the closest.
Right.
Yeah.
And so back then people lived longer, or they lived longer years.
Yeah, yeah.
Now our lifespans are only up to 100 something.
Roughly, yeah.
But back then it was longer?
Well, Methuselah was well over 900 years old, I think, when he died. And, of course, he was Noah's grandfather. And I think the world would have been very, very different. I mean, they had no idea. And if you read the book and observe, you will notice that I never used the word rain. They had no idea what rain was. So the whole, what we know as the ozone layer, would have probably been very different back then, because the water, the earth was watered from the ground up, not from the heavens down.
That's right.
So, and I think the air must have been a lot purer. There's a whole lot of factors that would have meant that they were far healthier, and hence the reason they lived longer. It's only since the flood that the age, the lifespan of the average human being has reduced considerably.
Well, I'm just thinking, picturing the earth before the whole flood happened, and how the things that we know today, like the seasons and all that water, which has become our oceans, that wouldn't have been like it was back then.
I'm not sure. When I wrote the story, I didn't want to make it so that people couldn't relate to it. So when you read the first chapter of Genesis, the story of creation, it actually does talk about there being the dry land and the seas and the and the heavens and the lights in the heavens, the greater light, which is the sun, the lesser light, which is the moon. I think it also talks about the seasons, but I'm just talking from memory here.
Well, I have the Bible here because I thought I'd bring it just in case we needed to refer to it. Sorry, this is a King James Version, so it might not be the one that many people are familiar with, but I quite like it. And it does say on the Genesis chapter 1, verse 9, God said, "Let the waters under the heaven gather together into one place, and let the dry land appear," and it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas, and God saw that it was good. Well, yes, there were seas already.
And there were probably hills. So I'd wanted to make sure, because sometimes it can be almost like a science fiction when we depart too much from what we know now. So the story was about the relationship. So I tried to make things easy to relate to, because there's a lot of conjecture on what the earth must have been like before the flood. And the reality is, none of us know. There's no written records except the little bit that we have in Genesis 1, chapters 1 to 3. And we know there were rivers, because it talks about the Euphrates and the Tigris and there's the four rivers, the Pishon, I can't remember the name of the fourth. So we know there were rivers, there would have been seas, whether it was one landmass, which is likely because...
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, I was thinking the Gondwana land or whatever the geologists call it.
Yeah.
Before it was broken up by the flood because of the waters
that's
coming out.
Because the waters would have erupted through almost like what we experience as earthquakes. So it would have been the shifting of the tectonic plates. It's all very interesting.
Even like some documentaries will mention, they might think, the Black Sea, you know, how Noah's Ark rested on the mountains of Ararat.
That's correct.
Yeah. And they sort of investigated the Black Sea and around it, because that's near where it is in Turkey. And they did find, which I remember from this history documentary, that there was a big flood. They found evidence that it was formed by a flood.
Yes, yeah.
So
now, a book that's really interesting, if you want to read about it, and it's published many, many years ago, but it's called The Genesis Flood, and it's the physics and the Scientology of they actually prove that there was this huge deluge, as they call it.
Deluge.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of broke through all the land, and it...
Yeah.
Evidences. Everything was devastated, and
But I mean, even the fossils, the way the fossils were formed so perfect, that can only happen with a very sudden weight.
Yes.
When you think, I mean, I can't even begin to imagine how many tons that amount of water would have weighed.
Yeah. So while your novel doesn't go into the physics of it, it's very interesting how it goes into the relationship. And from the Genesis story, it says Noah went in with his sons and his wife and his son's wife with him, I'm just reading, into the ark because of the waters of the flood. So his family and all the animals, of course, and then your novel goes into the family relationships.
Yeah.
And there are some characters in there.
Yes, there are. Now, obviously, in the Bible, it doesn't state what the names of the sons. No, the sons are named, but we don't know who the wives were. So this is where the fiction side of the story comes in. So I took the facts that I have, which is very important when writing a historical novel. You need to make sure that you have your facts right.
Mm-hmm.
But then a lot of the facts aren't actually stated in detail. So I created these characters, which is Serafina, which was Noah's wife,
yes.
And then Dinah and Hadassah and Tabitha were the three wives of the three sons. And, of course, we know that the sons were Shem, Ham and Japheth.
Yeah.
So I took the facts and then built up the characters. And, of course, I always identify with one of my characters. It's very important when writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in the book, I'm Serafina.
Yes.
So a lot of her character is my character.
Her. Yeah.
You know, if you know me very well, you'll notice some of the characteristics.
She's very supportive of Noah.
Well, I tried.
All right. Now, at the end of the story of Noah's in the Bible, in Noah's Ark, when they found the dry land, there was this beautiful rainbow that appeared.
Mm.
And I just want to ask you what you think about that.
I absolutely love rainbows, and I always have, long before I read the story of Noah. And, of course, it's God's promise to not destroy the earth again with a flood. And for me, rainbows always bring hope.
Mm, your book rainbows. Has a big rainbow on the cover.
I insisted on it when the book was actually published overseas by Melrose Books in UK. And when they were designing the cover, they couldn't find the picture I wanted. And I said, well, I've actually purchased a picture from a site called Fotolia.com where you can actually purchase these royalty-free photos.
Yes.
And I said, this is the one I want. And it didn't have the hands raised in thanks. But so they superimposed the hands, but the rainbow was my choice.
Mm.
It had to be on the book and it had to be bright.
So Voyage of the Redeemed, that's your book. Where can we find your book?
Okay, well, it can be bought directly from Melrose Books, which is on the back of the book. It should be.
Well, it's here.
Yeah, so if you just...
In the back.
Yeah, so it's melrosebooks.com, I think.
Yes.
Or it can be purchased direct from amazon.com.
Is it available as an ebook?
Yes, it is. I actually published, because I have the publishing rights, so I actually published it on Kindle as well. So if you look for it on Kindle, it's there. And as far as I know, it's only $1 a book.
Wow.
If you buy the ebook. Yeah.
And just talking about ebooks and different formats, what about audio?
Audio is a good idea. You'd have to, obviously, if you were going to do it audio yourself, I've never done it. Whether I would read it myself or whether you hire somebody who's really good at doing the reading, I don't know. I don't know much about it. But, I mean, that's a really good idea, particularly for people who are blind.
Mm. I'd love you to read a little excerpt from it, actually.
Well, I'll read the preface because that actually gives the breakdown of why I wrote it. And so Voyage of the Redeemed is about a small group of people determined to obey God in a depraved world. It is also about this Most High God and his fervent desire to save those enslaved by sin. He is the true hero of this narrative, repeatedly undertaking for those who trust him. The record of Noah and the flood of the book of Genesis is more than an historical event. It foreshadows the imminent return of Jesus Christ. And just go down a little bit. While I have attempted to remain true to the historical facts, this story is primarily about relationships. It is here that real life happens, and I've created ordinary, everyday situations to underline this fact. Share with me in the joy of broken hearts mended and desires fulfilled. Weep for those who are crushed by bitterness and stubborn pride. Feel the hope and fear and joy and sadness that so often walk side by side. And above all, rejoice in the sovereign Lord to whom nothing is impossible.
Thanks, Debbie. That's wonderful. Now, I have a book here.
Oh, yes. What are you reading?
Well, it's funny that you come from Africa. This book is called Kisses from Katie, A Story of Relentless Love and Redemption by Katie Davis, who's written it with Beth Clark. She is a young woman with a passion to serve Jesus. She's now 22. Katie lives in Uganda, where she is in the process of adopting 13 little girls and is the founder and director of Amazima, a ministry that reaches hundreds of other children in Uganda. Katie is originally from Nashville, Tennessee, where her parents and her brother live. This is her first book, and you can read her blog at www.kissesfromkatie.blogspot.com. Now, I haven't read her blog, but I'm nearly finished reading this book.
Are you enjoying it?
Yes, it was recommended to me, and it's just amazing.
There's a lot of good work going on in Uganda.
Yeah, so you're from Zimbabwe.
I'm from Zimbabwe, and I've never been to East Africa. We couldn't because of Zimbabwe, if you know the history. We had a bush war, we had sanctions, embargoes, all of that kind of stuff. So we just couldn't go. But it's beautiful. My aunt stayed in, I think it was Tanzania, for quite a few years.
Mm. Now, this book doesn't really have a map of Africa for those unfamiliar. Whereabouts is...
So you've got Zimbabwe, and then just north of us is Zambia, and then East Africa is north of Zambia, if I got my geography right. So you've got, I think Tanzania is the southernmost part of East Africa, and I think Uganda's to the north and Kenya is to the east,
I think. There's so many countries.
So, but they used to be collectively called East Africa, so probably still are.
Yeah. Mm. Well, yeah, this book, so she's from America. She goes in at the age of 18. She decides she wants to serve Jesus, and a way to do that is go on a mission trip for a year. And her parents wanted her to go to college, as they call university in America, but she decided she'd have a gap year and do this, and she loved it. And then she felt she couldn't go back to normal life or her life back in America, since I suppose God gave her a heart to serve and love all these children in Uganda who many were orphaned because of the war and the AIDS.
It's rife.
And it's just so sad. Mm. And just the poverty that she encounters there, where they don't have homes that are clean, they don't have running water and electricity, and there's always disease and things that are preventable. And she looks after them, she feeds them, she clothes them, she houses them.
Wonderful.
And it's just amazing. And she's managed to get sponsors for these children. And just, she's single. She's only, now she's 22, but.
That's amazing.
I'm just like, every time I'm like. So she's written this book, which tells you all about it. And it's, some of it is her diary of what she was learning as she was living there. So. Yeah, I would really recommend this one.
Okay.
Just amazing.
Yeah.
It's got pictures of
the children.
Yeah, I
can see that.
So, 14 girls? As she's single, she's not really allowed to adopt boys, but they just all sort of came to her and they call her mummy.
Yeah.
And then she had to face this decision where she had to go back to America and raise some money, and her parents wanted her to go to college.
Yes.
But her heart was in Uganda.
Yeah. Well, good on her for making that choice.
Mm.
It's not easy when you're not supported, especially by family.
Well, her parents were, I suppose, in one world and she was in another.
Mm.
Not to say they weren't Christians and weren't supportive, because her mum did go with her to experience it and see what it was all about.
Mm.
So she had the support of her parents, but just...
Well, it's not safe. That's the other factor they would be concerned about. I mean, we know what's been happening in Uganda. It's not safe. And you've really got to trust that God up there is actually looking after you. It's not safe.
Well, she didn't go on her own. She did help at an orphanage that was already set up.
Okay.
And so it wasn't like she was just wandering into a war-torn country.
Yeah.
Oh, and so that's that book.
And anything else you read?
Well, I found this book. I haven't actually read it yet. I just thought I'd share with you. It's called The Kiwi Bible.
Ah, I've heard of that.
Bits of the Kiwi Bible, as told by Chris Grantham, published by Penguin.
He actually spoke at one of the New Zealand Christian Writers workshops about a year or two ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Really interesting speaker.
So this, I haven't even started reading it, but it sounds really fun because it's the Bible sort of paraphrased into New Zealand language or vernacular.
Yeah.
So, you know, this bloke Jesus turned out to be a pretty interesting character with plenty to say.
Fun.
Yeah. So you're mentioning you're part of New Zealand Christian Writers. Would you like to tell us a little bit?
I'm on the committee, have been for a while, but I'm actually editor for the bi-monthly magazine called The Christian Writer. So I edit a lot of it. I write a lot of it. I'm also a level one competition judge because we have our writing competitions. So that's what I do, and I love it because my heart is that Christian writers would become excellent writers, because I think we've got a lot to bring to the literary world.
Yeah. Oh, Debbie, we've got so much more to talk about since you've mentioned that. Would you like to come back for another session?
I'd love to.
Well, we have a Facebook page. If you go on to planetaudio.org.nz/bookchooks, and there's a link down there to a Facebook page, which will also have our Goodreads site where you can discuss the books that we're reading on there. And I put all the books that I mention on the bookshelf. So the Facebook BookChooks page, if you just go into your Facebook, if you're on Facebook, and search for BookChooks, you can like us. And Debbie, you do publish some of your writing on Facebook.
Yes, I've been doing it maybe for about the last 6 weeks. I just suddenly thought there's so much junk comes up on Facebook, and why not use my writing to just bring some hope and encouraging stuff to people out there who need it.
That's wonderful. Well, you can befriend the book chooks.
Oh, haven't I already? I know I've done a like. I will befriend you.
Oh, good one. Yes, I like having lots of friends on Facebook, especially writing friends.
Yes.
All right. So next week, if you tune in next week, Debbie, if you come back, which I'm sure you will.
Yes, I definitely will.
We're going to talk a bit more about your Christian Writers, the New Zealand Christian Writers, and also this second novel you're telling me that you're planning on writing.
I've written a good deal of it already. Yeah.
Good. Can you say what the title?
It's And the Lion Roared.
And the Lion Roared. Sounds intriguing. Thank you, Debbie, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Bye for now, and happy reading, everyone.